everybody, and welcome to another great edition of Talking Tigs. I am Scott Girard. Joining me, as always, Tommy Johnson and Daniel Zollinger have another, dare I say, anything less than a great victory from LSU over Florida this week. They won 20-10, and wow, my goodness, the Tigers are 3-0. They're 1-0. I forgot. They're 1-0 every week until the end of the season. So we're working on that one game victory, trying to build forward. Lots to go over, but we're trying to, you know, we're walking on thin ice here with Brian Kelly. I don't know how far we can dive into it without being offensive, but plenty of talk, plenty of things to talk about with LSU and Florida, as well as the rest of college football. Man, there were a lot of other good games, too. You had Georgia, Tennessee go down to the wire, and then you had, my goodness, well, I mean, there's some blowouts, too, but A&M coming back to beat Notre Dame, mm-hmm. A lot of good games. Some others were more blowouts. I mean, USF is definitely not the real deal, at least compared to Miami, but sorry, guys, I'm trying to introduce too much already. I want to see how y'all are doing before we get into any of this. Tommy, Daniel, hope y'all had a great weekend. I mean, it's always better with an LSU win, but how are you?
Good. Good weekend. Good LSU win. A lot of good games, like you said, to watch. That Georgia-Tennessee game was a lot of fun. Watched a number of other games, but happy to be talking about another Tiger victory. Things are good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but before the season, I think we had circled this kind of first three game stretch and said that we'd be pretty happy if we chopped up like one win, one loss of Clemson and Florida and go kind of 2-1 into this next week. And now that we've won both and we're starting 3-0, feels really good. The theme so far, I would say, has been winning ugly, especially on the offensive standpoint, which we'll discuss at length here, I assume. But a win is a win, so always a good feeling. The atmosphere at Tiger Stadium looked to be pretty raucous and intense, as it typically is on Saturday night. Glad that the fans showed up in what's been a historic rivalry with Florida and one that hopefully doesn't go away when they move to the kind of new SEC scheduling next year, since there kind of has been so many bitter victories between the two. But glad we were on the right side of this one, kind of avenging last year's loss. And now we get a little bit of a breather with Southeastern before moving on to Ole Miss after that.
Amen. Daniel, you went there, so I got to call you out, buddy. LSU had a win against a ranked opponent at home, a rival, no less. What do you want from me? Brian Kelly's not here to defend himself, so I'm just speaking as Brian Kelly. What do you want from me? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I could start with you, Tommy. Sorry, Dan, I didn't mean to call you out. But, yeah, it's an LSU win. It's great to get. We're 3-0 going into, well, it's not a bye week, but against, a much lesser opponent, a chance to retool some things, maybe work on that offense. I think it's pretty obvious to everybody that LSU has a very good defense, and we're pretty, average to good on special teams. But our offense is not where we thought it would be anyway. But I guess Brian Kelly's happy about that. I mean, we can go down the usual drill that we do and just look at offense, defense, special teams. But overall, I would say, it was good. LSU got a win. It was getting chippy before the game. You knew it was going to be a battle in the trenches. LSU came out on top, mostly thanks to DJ Lagway. But, I mean, I don't know, Tommy, do you think it's, thinking of in BK's position, is it too much to criticize a good win, or do you think, we won, but we thought we should anyway, no gold stars for doing what you're supposed to do?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of both. I get Brian Kelly's point in some ways. I mean, for all the listeners, like if you go watch his press conference after the game, he really went after this one reporter, called everybody spoiled, for criticizing the offense.
That was Michael Cobble, by the way, right? Like a WBRZ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's really, and you would think that after how many years, this is year four, Brian Kelly. Is that right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. You would think after 4 years in the SEC, he would know the drill by now. But like that's the that is really the difference between SEC football and like the rest. It's that, yeah, like the mediocrity is going to be called out, like even if you get the win. I don't think that's something he had to deal with at Notre Dame. I've seen a lot of people complaining and talking about, you know, hey, like this guy's just he's still not the one. He's still not getting it. I do think that he has somewhat of a point in that there was a time, you know, really 10 years ago in the Les Miles era, like this is what we're watching right now is a Les Miles-esque team, solid, very elite defense, inept offense. And there was a time where that was like fine for LSU fans. I think that after having two Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks in a very quick span of time, you know, that we have been a little conditioned to elite offense as well. But overall, I mean, I tend to agree with the media. I tend to agree with the you know, the sentiment on like Twitter and everything. Yeah, that offensive performance yesterday was not great. I mean, Nussmeier, probably his worst game of the year. He threw for 220 yards, one touchdown. Do you have two picks?
Silly pick, interception. Yeah. It was just silly.
I mean, it was terrible. Yeah. I think that there wasn't a ton of great, you know, or anything good to pull from the offense. You know, we had the just to start off with, it's something we've talked about on this podcast for like over a year now. Still, the awful random timeouts. In, you know, you let the when you're letting the clock run down and you can't get set, you don't know what play is coming in. Like, that's just, I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's a personnel issue. Like, do our Division One SEC athletes really not know how to, you know, get set for a football play? Or is it a complexity issue? Is Joe Sloan trying to add too much to this offense and, you know, trying to, like, I forget, you know, we've gone through so many coordinators. It wasn't Denbrock.
Jake Peets.
The criticism with Jake Peets, I remember because we were doing the same thing with him where like we'd try to line up and then we couldn't even get a play in. And it was like, he's trying to be too NFL. Like, he's trying to add all these tags and these motions and everything on this. You know, is it that we're trying to do too much on the offensive side of the ball? I don't know. But at the core, I think that getting set to run a play in the before, you know, before the play clock goes off is like basic football. That's what a high school team has to do. And we consistently have trouble with it. I mean, we did not run the ball well until the end of the game, really. I think that my favorite part of that game, honestly, was the power eye we put in at the very end. I'm like, let's do that. Like, why not?
It worked.
It looked like, I mean, that was, I was like, man, just put Kenny Hilliard in the background and in the backfield and like, you know, take me away. Like that's what I love to see. But overall, I mean, disappointing performance by the offense.
Right. In the aggregate, the game went about is how we expected. Like, LSU gets the win with maybe a 1-2 score margin, and it stays a low scoring game due to a lot of defense and maybe some inept offense by both teams. And that's pretty much what happened. Although the road to get there was pretty wild start to finish. I mean, LSU came out very flat. We got the ball to start the game, and it was an immediate three and out, I think, with a couple draw plays and like an incomplete pass. And then we punted and it was like, oh, here we go. And then we take the field on defense, and I think the second or third play, Weeks gets called for targeting, crown of the helmet to Florida's receiver, and then he's out of the game. And then it was downhill. And then they marched down the field. Thankfully, we held them to 3 points on that opening drive to kick a field goal. And then basically nothing happened for like 15 minutes where the team just kind of went back and forth. LSU's first three offensive possessions were all three and outs. So you look at the stat sheet and at the time of possession, we only had the ball, I think, 20 minutes out of the 60 for the game. Florida outgained us in terms of yards, first downs. They only had 10 first downs for like a whole quarter and a half, I think we had one first down. And so what are we doing out here on offense? And then finally they started to pick up a little steam. We got our only offensive touchdown in the second quarter. And then I sent this stat to y'all that through three games, we've scored 7 points in the first quarter across three games, which is kind of crazy. Like how, and that was a criticism we had about Brian Kelly last year and going in the past, like we start so slow and I don't really know yep. why that is or
we
how to correct
flat.
Yeah. Or how to correct that if it is possible to correct it. But it's just very frustrating to watch, but then yeah, the defense held on and we bent, but didn't break. And then the Lagway train came off the rails and he started basically handing us the game or less, lofting the ball up there. Although the defensive back play was really exceptional, ball hawking across the field. These guys, Devon Keys with two picks, including the pick six that was really like the play of the game. And then AJ Halsey, DJ Pickett with an awesome one, yeah. And Tamarcus Cooley all getting in on the action. So that was fun to watch. At least you're like, these are some nasty guys who can play together as a unit. And it's definitely a positive and dare I say championship level defense. We just got to get the offense wrinkles worked out. And like Tommy touched on, the kind of the coaching aspects and the penalties that haunted us for a lot of the game, false starts, holdings, although Florida had a few of those, including a huge holding play that wiped out like a 95 yard touchdown. Yes. So that's something that you definitely have to take a look at that gets hidden in the stats there.
Yeah. And that was funny. You could see Jacobian Guillory was still on the 5 yard line all by himself. Cause he knew. He was just waiting for everyone else to kind of catch up to the reality of it. And yeah, I think it was Deshaun Spears that had the two picks. What? Yeah, but he scored. Wait,
I said Devon Keys, who also had a really good yeah. game. I meant to say Spears, and got similar names.
Right. That's all right. I mean, maybe DBU's back. I mean, Lagway kind of gave it to us in that sense. But I mean, just to go back to what Brian Kelly was saying, because he was asked, it was the very first question of the post game press conference. So maybe that was probably why he took that a little way instead of like, hey coach, congrats on a gritty win. You guys won it. You didn't, may not have gone the way you wanted to, but you got the win. Can you kind of talk about that? And no, instead he was like, why does the offense suck? Go. And he's like, what are you talking about? Did you, the running game, you can't run. Did you see the last play of the game? So I get all that. And I get why Brian reacted that way. But, I mean, kind of, I guess, go back to the facts of it. If you're waiting till the last play of the game to break out the run, the I formation, this running game, you can't point to that as like, see, we did run the ball. Because if you knew you could, you'd have done it way before the second to last play. And the only thing I'll give them flack about the offense is, at that point, why didn't we just try and score again? Right. Cause
yeah, I mean, they were trying to run out the clock and just ice it, but it would have been nice to get another seven. They're kind of like against Louisiana Tech last week. It's just like, you're not running the score up, but you're making it look a little bit better. Like we can score if we want to.
Yeah.
Just run it in. If they let us, hey, that's football. The other thing, Florida wouldn't even let us take a knee. They're getting chippy with the
I thought Nussmeier Nussmeier was going to get hurt on the kneel down because they were like coming after him and he like got knocked backwards. Like he's going to twist an ankle on the kneel down. It's going to go awful.
That's why I say just run it in. If they stop is great. If not, sorry, that's football. No apologies. That's what BK should have done. Tommy, what do you say?
I think first of all, DBU's back. Like, I think that was proven last night. It's exciting to see. I'm getting very nostalgic about the way that this team is playing. I mean, we've held every team we played to 10 points. Now, I mean, that's kind of, I don't know if that's, like with the way Clemson's been playing, took another loss to Georgia Tech, right. a bad loss for them. I mean, Louisiana Tech's not a great team. Florida clearly had issues, has issues this year with their loss to USF. But holding any team to 10 points is pretty impressive. To do it three games in a row, I think that's a huge positive. On the offensive side, I agree. There's a lot of room to make up. I mean, I think a lot of it falls on Nussmeier. When you're the front runner for the Heisman Trophy going into the season, like I think he's got some some ground to make up. He's making, you know, he hasn't made great decisions, especially last night, like with, especially with that pick.
Where there was already a holding call on LSU. So we're already getting backed up 10 yards and then he made, went from bad to worse.
Lost one up there.
Yeah.
But I also, you know, I think that, from watching, I think for the first 3 weeks, I mean, this seems to be like a down year for the SEC in general. And so I think it could end up working out toward in our favor. Looking forward, I still like our chances. I consulted with our proprietary Talking Tigs model, after this game and, you know, after the kind of disappointing performance against Tech, just that you didn't really put it on them. Really stifled offensive performance against Florida. It still has us projected to be 11-1. An upgrade from the original projection. So, you know, it's like the train rolls on. I hope we can get better. I hope we can improve. That's the mark of a good team, really, is like, you know, can they improve week to week? Can you improve and peak at the end of the season? But I think all eyes really are on that Ole Miss game in 2 weeks. You got a week to get right against Southeastern. You got a week to, and I say get right. I mean, we're 3-0. So usually you say like, it's a get right week after a bad loss. And it's like, you know, that kind of thing. But you got a week to somewhat rest, prepare with eyes on an Ole Miss team that, on the road, you know, your first road SEC game, Lane will have it all for us. And, you know, it's going to be a real test for our defense and a test for our offense in that we, you know, they might give up more than 10 points. And so we might have to score.
Yeah, I mean, Ole Miss just beat Arkansas 41-35, so they combined for over 70 points. And we saw Tennessee, Georgia, they both put up over 40, admittedly in overtime. But yeah, I saw on Twitter somewhere, and I forget who it was, but in 2019, the LSU offense was so good that they carried a decent but not amazing defense to a national championship. Meanwhile, our defense this year is looking like it's so good that it could carry a middling offense to the playoffs and possibly beyond. We just have to get that offense okay. Like, we don't have to be Joe Burrow throwing four touchdown passes to Justin Jefferson in the first half of every game. We just got to put up a few points on the board. And the defense, especially, and also,
you know, Daniel, you mentioned time of possession for this LSU team, you know, 20 minutes out of 60. Mm-hmm. Like, you just can't, even if I would be completely fine if we don't score a ton of points, but we just hold on to the ball. You can't have your defense out there for 3/4 of the game and just have them always playing.
Right. Mm. And then the final thought on the 2019 comparison was that the defense did definitely get better as the season went along and definitely was good, I would say, at the end of the season. And so that's what we need from our offense, is that development. And we don't need 50 points per game, considering our defense is holding opponents to 9 points per game. We just need a little bit more than 20, especially going to Oxford and Ole Miss a couple of weeks when Lane always has a high-powered attack. And that'll be a tough test on the road. And we'll see a lot of the makings from what happens this week against Southeastern, which admittedly, like, we're going to win this one almost no matter what. It's just kind of the manner that we do it that could tell a little bit of the story, kind of like against Louisiana Tech. Because against Tech, we're like, okay, that wasn't great, but like, is it just a fluke? And then now I think we've seen that the offense just – it ain't perfect. So lot to work on there. And then it sounds like we're just doing nothing but complaining, and this is what Brian Kelly was upset about. And so it's like, yeah, we're 3-0, but it's hard to ignore these type of things that you see three straight games.
I mean, I think it's a bad look for Brian Kelly. You can't watch football. I mean, watch that game and know a little bit about football and not say there's something wrong with that offense. We got some talent on that offensive side of the ball,
especially
receivers.
Yeah, our longest reception of the year to Bauer Sharp. You know, Trades is out. We had Braylon Moore back, but yeah, it's like all our players were there. We finally got our longest reception of the year, maybe our longest run too. I'm not sure, but it's like it's just spotty, right? We just want consistency. And like you said, maybe they will figure it out, kind of like the defense did in 2019. But I think the one thing we can all agree on is at least we know we have the right players in place as far as receivers, running back, and quarterback, which is what we all agreed was holding us back all those years with all those good defenses wasted. But it's like we have the right guy at quarterback, right? I mean, that one interception was bad, but other than that, I mean, he did enough to win the game.
Not only is he, I mean, whether or not he's the only, or whether or not he's the right guy, he's the only guy. I mean, look at our depth chart. We don't have another serviceable quarterback. The one that you know maybe might have been next in line now plays running back for us and is getting significant snaps.
Yeah, and we said the wide receivers are not really the issue. Like, we've got athletes at all the receiving positions, including Aaron Anderson, who's like a wide receiver one, probably one of the best in the SEC, who he's getting good yardage, but I feel like we could utilize him even more. We saw it, I think, two or three times where he runs that kind of 12-yard slant down the middle, and his speed can get him that burst for extra yards after the catch. Like, that's bread and butter right there for Nussmeier and Anderson. Like, he's almost uncoverable. Just do that more. Like, yeah. I know you kind of become one-dimensional, but we didn't throw that until like the second quarter. It's like, just force feed him there and let him run. And that's easy money, I would think, for Joe Sloan. Not that I'm an offensive coordinator, but just get him the ball and a high percentage play and good things can happen. And instead of kind of just trying all sorts of weird stuff or boring stuff, just the halfback draw to Durham that went for not much most of the game.
You know, I don't quite know what our offensive identity is. I can't really tell. I mean, I know I see a lot of draw plays, like you said, Daniel. I see a lot of screens. I see a lot of screens that don't work.
Yep.
And I get, you know, the thinking behind like the screens. We've got a ton of playmakers. Get them the ball in space. Let them make moves. Let them make plays. I get it. I mean, we talked about it all you know season coming into this game. We have so many downfield threats. And I've seen one successful attack of that attack of, you know, the downfield, and it was against Clemson, and it was that touchdown that was taken away. I think that now the other thing that I noticed, seems like that, you know, some of these receivers are just not on the same page with Nussmeier. I forget who it was, ran the little sit down route. Right to the middle of the field. Nussmeier throws it where it should be, and then and the guy like moves to the opposite.
Yeah, it was
side.
One of the running backs. It was either I think Durham or Juwan Johnson. But yeah, you can see the frustration. Durham.
And you could see that. And I mean, even I think it was Greg McElroy on the call. He was like, "Oh, like, you know, you got it. Like, you got to be there for that. Like, that's, you know, that's easy money." But overall, like all that said, we're still 3-0. I think we might have the best defense in the country. It's the first time in maybe 10 years that I can say we have a legit top elite defense, mm-hmm. which is pretty cool to see.
Championship level.
Again, I'll bring it up again. I loved seeing that that power eye formation. Please give me more of that. Yeah. Never thought we'd want to say that, right? Like, we got right. So used to it in the Les Miles era. That it was like, please, like, can we like get some guys in space? But after seeing that, I'm like, man, and I was talking to a coach buddy of mine the other day. I do have a theory that, I mean, take the position of linebacker, kind of like generic linebacker from 2010. Was like think about Rolando McClain or Dante Hightower, one of these huge hulking guys for Bama, that you know was almost like a stand-up defensive lineman. Now you look at one of the most successful linebackers from years ago is Christian Harris, another Bama guy, but he's a Louisiana talent. He played cornerback in high school. We've seen the game has become so athletic, so speed oriented, so spread the field that I do think that there is an opening. And I'm not saying it's going to be this team. I'm not saying it's going to be this year. But I think there's an opening for some team out there to really lean into the power game and say, look, we're going to get the biggest guys out there and shove it down your throat. And I think that there are going to be defenses that are built to combat that spread offense, the air raid offense and everything, the RPOs and screens and everything that we've seen over the past maybe 5 to 7 years, that aren't going to be able to handle it. So that was seeing that play, like, you know, keyed in my head. I was like, I've been thinking about this for a while, and that's what, there it was.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say, just based off of what you said, there was, you know, we had a departure. LSU lost Sadir Mitchell this week. Big guy, big hulking guy from Texas. And now most people thought, oh, maybe he wasn't getting playing time. Turns out it was because, just, you know, as BK said, simply put, standards weren't met. But if you look at that guy compared to, say, Bernard Gooden, who is getting playing time and is making an impact on the field, that guy's shorter, he's quicker. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe that's what our defensive tackle coach really wants, because he knows that's what effective, at least right now here in college. You know, maybe Shadir Mitchell go on and have a great pro career, but for here right now in LSU, we need these short, speedy guys to make an impact. And yeah, we have guys like Harold Perkins coming in there to disrupt the quarterback instead of a guy like Dante Hightower or Lemon Barrow, you know, these big hulking guys. So yeah, maybe the field has shifted that way, and it's do it or suffer the consequences, you know?
No, mm-hmm. I think that's a good point. I find it interesting the way that the game has changed and the way that personnel has changed to fit the new schemes that people want to run. I do think, like, again, like I think there might be an opening for, let's say Nussmeier still struggles for the rest of the season. Like, are we able to get a little bit of push and really run it down some people's throats? I don't know. We saw it against Florida to win the game for us, seal it.
Yeah.
Can we continue to do that? I think that's an interesting thing to look at.
Yeah, we're playing Iowa football now, but
because no one knows how to game plan against it, right? They don't. Nobody does this, like you said, except Iowa.
But the one thing we talked about, the offensive struggles, I did want to, I mean, we touched on it a little bit, the success of the defense almost went unsaid after weeks departed. I mean, guys filled in and stepped up. We talked about Devon Keys at the safety position, all three safeties between Keys and then Tamarcus Cooley and AJ Halsey. Good to see after a couple of years of very lackluster safety play. And then the corners, I mean, DJ Pickett and Mansoor Delane, who was locking it down on the other side. I think he gave up like one catch all game, pretty good. And then some other guys on the line, like Harold Perkins was wreaking havoc on DJ Lagway. Should have had one sack, but he kind of blitzed through and forced an incompletion, and I think the three and out. And then Jack Pyburn against his old team made a couple nice stops and even got in on that offensive play, kind of in the jumbo package. So that was pretty cool. And then, yeah, Jacoby and Guillory getting one big sack for the senior. So solid effort across the board, and hopefully that just continues to be a very focal strength of ours the rest of the season.
And also, don't forget the linebackers, Young Weeks came in.
Yeah, Zach Weeks. West Weeks got injured a little bit towards the end of the game. Hopefully that's not lingering. So we had 2 weeks down, 1 week left. But at least all three of them got to see the field, which was cool.
We got Weeks brothers on a Pez dispenser, it seems like.
Also want to give a shout out PJ Woodland. Had a few good plays, really good tackle on special teams.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to see that. I'm telling you, the secondary, I think we're back, man. Like, I really.
Well, yeah, we'll find out, like you said, in 2 weeks when we go to Ole Miss. And then after that, yeah, we've definitely got our schedule laid out for us. Definitely big challenges ahead. Probably not as big as Florida, because they have to somehow regroup after this. After getting a huge letdown to South Florida, now they have to travel to Miami who seems more like the real deal than I would say from the beginning of the season. And then just their schedule gets, you know, after that, it's just hard team, top 10 team. So Florida, I feel bad for Billy Napier. I think we should probably put a clock out, like an hourglass, because if he makes it through the season, I'll be impressed. They said they would give him the season, but you would think like this game he would probably need, if nothing else, just for the schedule in front of him. But again, LSU held them to 10 points. It's not that just we've held people to 10 points, but it's like that was two quarters. Like they didn't score in the second half. Clemson didn't score in the second half. Louisiana Tech didn't score for three quarters. So got to feel pretty good about the defense. I don't know. Maybe it's like 2011 where we just have enough to get by, and then maybe we'll get some special team scores here and there, some pick sixes, whatever the case. But we have another week to kind of work on new stuff before we travel to Ole Miss. Meanwhile, again, Florida's just I can't imagine what they're thinking with their schedule. I know Billy Napier is probably like, might as well just call a realtor, you know, start to think ahead. But, I mean, Miami and South Florida wasn't even close. The other good game, Georgia, Tennessee, that was, like you said, it went to overtime. Dogs came out on top. Heck yeah. Texas. Ooh, man. I don't still see how they would stay after, you know, after this week, still number 7, but they probably will. But Arch even admitted, yeah, I am not living up to the hype. I don't know. There was other good games. Vanderbilt took out South Carolina. Blowout almost. Georgia Tech topped Clemson. I want to save some for you guys, but just other than LSU, Florida, great week in college football. Right?
No, another good week. The results of this week, especially with South Carolina going down, which is a team that at least I thought was going to be very good, with Lenore Sellers back again. Now he did go out early in the game, to like a
it looked like a targeting, right?
Yeah, didn't they? Yeah. Well, they threw the guy out, I think.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's why Shane Beamer almost got thrown out. This guy was just full on, head on into Lenore Sellers with his head. But they were about to snap the ball, and then they said, hold on, review for targeting. And like, it was just a weird situation.
Yeah.
But now their guy's hurt, and so much for Carolina.
True. And then, you know, Tennessee really goes the distance with Georgia. Really should have won that game. Like, missing that field goal is just.
Yeah. And Georgia scored a touchdown on a crazy, like, 4th and 7 where the quarterback Gunnar Stockton like dropped it in the bucket, like in the end zone.
I think that, you know, this further kind of just like what I said earlier, when we're talking about LSU, like in the broader SEC, the SEC is just, I think it's a down year for the SEC. Georgia's not, you know, unbeatable, dominant team. Tennessee looked good, not great. South Carolina, a team that we were looking at circled on our calendar, as a potential, you know, trouble spot, especially if they were to get hot. They had a really bad loss to Vanderbilt. I do think that makes our Vanderbilt trip to Nashville a little bit more interesting.
Yeah. Typically that's like an automatically circled W on your schedule. And now it's like, Pavia and them are cooking a little bit.
They are. I think we'll be fine with our defense. I think we're going to be too much for Pavia, but still, like I said, makes it more interesting. All the analysts and the writers, everybody, they love parity in this game. And for years, all we talked about was how, you know, the SEC was too much, and they basically wrote the rules for the playoff to try and artificially create parity because there were too many SEC teams, you know, dominating. I think this year we actually have it. And for my money, I think the only team that has really looked the part so far, to my eyes, is Oregon.
Yeah, they've been solid, kind of dismantling every team they've played with their new quarterback, Dante Moore. The games that I watched the end of the Georgia Tech game against Clemson, where they kicked a field goal as time expired to win, and then the fans stormed the field. I'm not sure if you should be storming against a Clemson team that's now 1-2, but I guess it's a nice win for Georgia Tech, who now has their highest ranking in like 15 years or something.
And Georgia Tech doesn't get much. I agree. I think, and to go on my point from last week, I don't know what has caused this. Maybe it's social media, maybe it's just the kids are soft these days, which they are, but we storm the field as a society too much now, and I agree. I think it's just embarrassing when you storm a field against.
Mm-hmm. And then that makes our win against Clemson look even worse, because now they're 1-2, and their one win against Troy was a tough one for them, and so now Florida's 1-2 as well. Not exactly marquee wins at this point, but we beat who's in front of us, so that is what it is. And then the Georgia Tennessee was very competitive, all back and forth. We're like, okay, here's some offense. Tennessee was strong early, and then Georgia kind of stormed back to win it, and then silenced the Rocky Top Nation, which the stadium was looking pretty cool with their checkerboard stuff too. I don't think LSU could ever handle that. We couldn't even really handle the yellow out game against Florida. There was still plenty of purple in the stands.
And didn't they try and do like a little wristband with a light on it? Did y'all hear about that?
Yeah, it was the light up wristband things, but I mean, it looked okay actually when they had like the LED lights and they would dim them and everybody was flashing it, but it wasn't anything super special in my opinion.
I agree.
But you could tell they're trying to get something going, because everyone talks about, oh, Tiger Stadium, Death Valley at night. It's one of the toughest places. I still feel like, you know, Brian Kelly made a point to say something last week. We need our fan, you know, we need this environment, you know, this legendary environment that we have. We need to actually represent it. And I still feel him on that. Stadium was full this past weekend. It was full towards the end because LSU was, it was still kind of a close game. So that made sense. But yeah, you want to have that environment. I don't blame him for trying to think of stuff, but you can definitely tell that they can, should, definitely need to, especially if it's, you know, next week, because Southeastern Louisiana, you think, even if it's a night game, you think people are going to stay through the third quarter, especially if we're up like we should be, or even if we're not, even if it's 10 to nothing at half. I don't know. Do you think people are sticking around for that?
It did seem like the stands at LSU were slightly not empty, but like a little bit departed towards the end of that Florida game, because it wasn't decided until pretty much the very end. So I was kind of wishing people had stuck around a little bit more, but they got places to be, I guess.
Well, I mean, honestly, and this is something I've talked to people on the government side of my 9-to-5. LSU has a severe problem. It's a parking problem, and it's a leaving the game problem. Mm-hmm. And I talked to somebody actually earlier today who went to the game. They said that they sat in Contraflow, which is for the listeners who haven't been able to go to a game, is the way that they divert traffic around the stadium after the game's played. They sat in the traffic for 2 hours to get like what should be 10 minutes down the road. Mm-hmm. It's really unacceptable, and I don't fault people for if you leave
early.
Yeah. Like when you're leaving early, like if you're trying to beat Contraflow, I don't necessarily fault you for it, because I mean, Daniel, you and I we've sat in it before. Remember we went to that pizza place after that game. Me and Daniel went to a game maybe 2 years ago, and it was the Contraflow was so bad that we couldn't even get to my house. We just went to a pizza place.
And there's very limited options to exit. So heaven forbid you accidentally go the wrong direction and like to start with. And then like, you're not turning around for miles plus hours. So yeah, I know plenty of people are like, all right, we stayed till halftime. Let's leave now. We can make it home by the fourth quarter and then watch the end of the game, like in comfort. Yeah. So it's a tough trade-off, but then yeah, but back to the games. Another kind of under the radar, nice win was Tulane against Duke, against their former quarterback, actually Darian Minza, who took a multi-million dollar NIL deal to go to Duke. And then for LSU fans who want to get an edge on Ole Miss next week, Tulane is going to Oxford to play Ole Miss on ESPN 3:30 or 2:30 Central, excuse me. So that should be one to watch for in the middle of the day. So excited about that.
Mm-hmm. Is Tulane's not ranked yet?
No, they're not, but their quarterback, Jake Retzlaff, who was BYU starting quarterback, but got dismissed from the team for kind of like not following team rules or something. Like immediately transferred to Tulane. He's made a big impact. He had 4 rushing touchdowns against Duke yesterday. So kind of big time player, maybe a dark horse Heisman candidate.
Yeah. Real quick, the Texas A&M Notre Dame game, which was actually pretty good, came down to the wire too. Mm-hmm. A&M came out on top with a late TD strike. Do you think it's finally time, like with Notre Dame, and this is not, do they deserve to be in the top 25? Do you think they will rank them outside the top 25? Because this is
it's already come in. They're number 24.
That is so ridiculous.
Sorry to burst your suspense, but yeah, with 0 wins on the season through 3 weeks, they're still ranked, which is kind of crazy.
Isn't that just ridiculous?
I can defend it. I don't know.
How? What have they done?
They lost close games to a number 10 A&M team and a number 4 of Miami.
And then it's kind of the classic question of like, is it the 25 best teams or the 25 teams who have done the most so far, or kind of accomplishments like that? Like, does LSU deserve to be the number 3 team in the country? I'm not sure if I would say that.
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't be offended if they put us at number 11, even though we're 3-0. I understand some fans would go ape caca over that, but maybe that'll motivate our guy. Maybe it doesn't. Doesn't matter. Because if we're after 4 weeks, we're 4-0, and then after if we go to Ole Miss and we're 5-0, but it still looks ugly, how many teams could say they're 5-0 at that point, right?
No, that's right. I watched that Notre Dame game, especially towards the end. I think that there's a big asterisk on that win against A&M. Now, I mean, I'm no fan of the Aggies. We all know that. But, I mean, there was a bad holding that was missed where they,
sure.
I saw it.
He tackled the guy. Yeah.
On that game winning play for A&M. So, I don't know. I think, I mean, missed calls are part of it. Like, yeah, you can't.
Not but, on one play.
I think Notre Dame is, I wouldn't say they're as good as they are last year, but I still think they're a pretty good team.
Yeah. For you folks that like to play the betting lines, could you imagine if you, because Penn State, I think, was, they had like a 48-point spread.
Oh, I saw this.
Yeah. They were up 52-6, and then Villanova just chucks one at the last minute, get a touchdown. And
it was like an insane catch, like tiptoe in the back of the end zone to on the last play of the game to go from 0-7 and cover the spread and the total. So it's like, this has to be rigged.
Right. That's why I will never do that. I mean, if you're brave, if you do all those parlays, I mean, you're lucky as heck if you win it. I would say, you know, like, what are the odds of that happening? But yeah, stuff like that happening, it's just crazy. Right.
Mm-hmm. There's not even a spread for LSU against Southeastern that I could find it right now. I would guess if it does come out, it'd be around 40 or something, which it's almost hard to believe that LSU is going to put up 40 points. I'm
the under on that one.
Yeah, I think that 30 or more is a success, which is a kind of a sad target to put up against an FCS team. But yeah, let's get 30 or more, hold them to 10 or less, and get out of there.
Right. And we can't look beyond that because we're still only 1-0. And we have to just look at the game in front of us. So any quick predictions? I mean, obviously there's no, we can't hold you to it because you could say up to 40 something points, but they'll, you know.
I'm going to say LSU 31, Southeastern 7, which I think is a solid, but not amazing win.
I'm going to go a little bit more. I think we'll put up 42. I think Southeastern, I think we'll allow them. I'll just call it 10. Some garbage time points there.
Yeah.
So 42-10.
I'm gonna move the needle for both. I'm gonna say LSU 45, Southeastern 13.
Okay.
Nice.
So we're all about the same.
Mm-hmm. Right. But any other games either this week that we didn't get to that you wanted to mention, or next weekend, because man, that Ole Miss Arkansas game, that actually lived up to it. That actually came down towards the end too. And Arkansas, man, that's one of those games where before, you know, it's like you were saying earlier, you know, as far as what teams can be, I don't know. It's I think it's an even sum game in a lot of respects, because teams that obviously we maybe didn't have to worry about as much, like Florida, now there's Arkansas, who looks strong, even though they did lose to Ole Miss. Then there's, you know, Ole Miss themselves. Then there's Alabama, who after that opening loss to FSU kind of looks like the Alabama of old all of a sudden. Ty Simpson has figured it out. The guy looks like he's been lighting up the scoreboard with like video game numbers. So, but like after one game, I'm thinking, hey, maybe we've got a chance to dominate Bama this year. Now I don't know. Now it could be another tough game. So I think it's an even sum. It just, it just goes back and forth to pin who's hotter that week. What do y'all say?
Just on the games to watch for maybe next week, real quick, the kind of kicks off at noon, Texas Tech at Utah in a Big 12 matchup. Kind of weird to say that. But yeah, Texas Tech 17, Utah 16, two teams that actually performed pretty well so far this year. So that one may be good. And then in the afternoon slate, I already called out Tulane at Ole Miss on ESPN. At the same time, it's going to be Auburn at Oklahoma on ABC. So that one might be one to watch for LSU fans in terms of future opponents. And then in the evening slate, a game that two teams kind of finding themselves punching above their weight right now, which would be number 9 Illinois at number 19 Indiana. Not football powerhouses in the traditional sense by any means, but Indiana thought they should get College Game Day, I think, maybe for the first time in decades, maybe ever. But they instead gave it to Miami versus Florida. And I mean, I kind of understand where they're coming from. It's like, just go out of the realm of normalcy a little bit and have fun in Indiana. But yeah, that's at the same time as that Florida Miami game. And then in a really weird one, Big Ten after dark, Michigan State goes to USC in an 11 p.m. Eastern kickoff. Weird that that's like a conference game that's kicking off so late. So if you're born in the midnight oil, you can check that one out. But yeah, a little bit down week in terms of LSU gaming, but hopefully still some exciting matchups across this board.
I'm very, like you said, Daniel, calling out the Tulane Ole Miss game. I'm very interested in watching that one. I think that that's going to be Ole Miss's first kind of real test, I would say.
Yeah, and their starting quarterback was out this past week against Arkansas, but their backup actually played really well. So yeah, that could be a battle to watch.
I mean, you know, they played Kentucky. They played them real close. Kentucky gave them everything they had. It really kind of went back and forth with Arkansas. So Tulane's a hot team. I'm excited to see them. I think the other one that the big one I have circled is Auburn, Oklahoma. I mean, John Mateer has really shown to be the top quarterback in college football right now. So, and that's again, like we talked about, I talked about it last week. I'm going to keep beating this drum, but it's the last game of the season for us is going to be at Norman, Oklahoma. So, definitely going to be monitoring them, for the rest of the season. I'm a little bit disappointed in the game day selection of going to Miami.
We just saw Florida put up 5 picks against us, and Miami's been above expectations. Like Carson Beck has actually looked good for them. Yeah. But that's a thing where it's a little bit more of the glamour over maybe the football.
Yeah. I'm sure Cignetti at Indiana is using that as absolute bulletin board material. he's always got a grievance.
And they're probably expecting the same kind of crowd that Miami had in that first game, because their stadium, which has been known to be, not the most attended games, but they really brought it that first game against Notre Dame. So we'll see. I imagine they would again, because it's Florida, but
now they play at Hard Rock, right?
Yes. Which is actually like 45 minutes from the Miami's campus, which is kind of crazy.
Kind of weird. Yeah.
Kind of like UCLA plays at the Rose Bowl, which is also like, well, depending on what time you go, also like 45 minutes from Brentwood. I don't know. They could probably just play at SoFi and just be as good. But, those old school boys, they probably have contracts for that. But it doesn't matter, because UCLA is 0-3. Just fired their coach, actually. Same as Virginia Tech. And, boy, doesn't this – I mean, if you're Tennessee, you got to – even after Georgia loss, you got to feel good, because – Imagine where they'd be if they still had Nico, right? Because the guy's like stepped away from the team at UCLA. Coach is gone. Don't know what's going on there. Interesting. Go ahead.
I was going to say two things to watch out for. I wasn't aware of this rule, but with
transfer,
the transfer portal opening up for 30 days immediately after coach.
I was going to mention that. It seems like a great poaching opportunity, although it doesn't seem right. Almost.
It doesn't seem. No, it does not seem right. It almost seems like a baseball free agency. Like you could pick.
Do we know? Do we know about the eligibility of them at the new team? Like, are they? Can they play this season, or do they have to wait for next year? Like, if they transfer,
I think they can. Put a jersey on them. Get them on the field, I think.
I think they can. I don't know how that works with their academics, though, because how do you change classes mid-quarter? Like, don't you have to be enrolled into something?
That's a good point.
We could see another situation like LSU at the end of the Ed Orgeron era where we were down to, 40-something scholarship players.
Yeah.
The mass exodus. That was kind of crazy.
I wonder if let's say we were able to pick up, I wouldn't mind picking up another offensive lineman. You know what I mean? Like, we could get a stud offensive lineman from UCLA. That's an interesting dynamic of being able to get a guy because their coach gets fired. The other thing I was gonna bring up about UCLA, did you see how they were, exploring entering the Blue Sky D2 conference? And then the D2 conference was like, nah, we're good.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. It's a train wreck over there in Los Angeles.
Yeah, but overall, I mean, another good week of college football. I can't believe week four. We always say it. We always say it goes too fast, but
coming up on a quarter of the way through, it feels like it just started. But been good so far, especially at LSU, because we don't have that I'm going to jinx it by saying it, but don't have that loss yet to kind of hold us back. So plenty of opportunities down the stretch here.
Yeah, exactly. And we're literally a quarter of the way through almost. And I don't know, would you still say that you could stick behind your, before the season predictions for LSU? I feel like I can, because we've already got by at least one or two hurdles that I thought might've been a loss. But again, I did pick Clemson. So, I wasn't maybe sure about Florida. There's a few others, Ole Miss coming up, but, based on our great defense and yet to be seen or yet to be molded offense, do you kind of stick by with your preseason prediction?
Well, I had LSU at 9-3, including the loss to Clemson, which obviously didn't happen. You could definitely still claim three losses on the remaining schedule, although with the way LSU has been playing so far, thankfully more positive than that, I would probably strike one of those and stick it at 10-2 with hopefully a playoff berth at that point. So I'm definitely pleased with how things have gone overall.
I feel the same way. I mean, I feel like I just have to stick with my 11-1 prediction. I messed up on the one loss. I did pick Clemson as well, but train keeps rolling. I think we're in a good spot. Still a lot to fix, especially on the offensive side of the ball, regardless of what Brian Kelly wants to say. Mm-hmm. I think he knows that. Like, you can't not. If he doesn't, that's even more concerning. Like, if it's just coach speak and he wants to defend his guys and he doesn't want to answer the question, it's fine. Like, I don't care. But like, there has to be changes, adjustments, and further coaching being made on the offensive side of the ball. And if not, that is football malpractice.
Malpractice. Exactly. You got to think they see all these things in practice every day. They're, like you said, they're probably protecting their players. They're not going to come out and say, well, honestly, we have the playbook and we just can't execute it in practice, or the ones we can't execute in practice, we don't feel comfortable doing in the games because we're not executing in the games like we do in practice. And our players are just, they're holding us back at this point. They're not going to say that. So maybe they are kind of like maybe in the Les Miles game, right? Or the Les Miles years. In the Les Miles years, I feel like he was always doing that too. We're like, well, just give us some sort of coach answer, coach speak. But I feel like they know that, guys, this is what we got. and this is what we're able to do. And we know our defense is great. We're trying to find new wrinkles on offense, but we haven't been able to. I'd say at least back then, you knew it was more personnel. Like LSU, like Joe Burrow was like, oh my God, we felt like if we had Joe Burrow the last 5-6 years, you know, someone of that caliber, our seasons would have been totally different. And I don't know, maybe that's still the case, but remains to be seen. Maybe they'll find it. They'll get it clicking. I will say this, even in these championship years, every team has a game that they kind of trudge through and they just, you know, they win somehow because they are championship level. I would say in 2019, what was that? It was like that Auburn game, right? We won like 23-20. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, all these other top ranked teams were winning by double digits, but for some reason, we just couldn't look the same against Auburn. I mean, it's not great that we've had two of those so far in three games against top-ranked teams, but, I mean, they are still winning, and you can kind of tell by those games that our defense was not going to, I don't know, you felt like our defense wasn't going to let us down, and it's like our offense just needs to do enough to kick that last field goal to go ahead and or whatever the case, but I feel like that's where we're at. Like, we do have a championship level team will probably take a loss or two, which is what I put us at. But I mean, they do have some time to go over stuff, to figure stuff out. Maybe they can. Otherwise, yeah, we'll probably be closer to 9-3 watching the playoffs at home.
Yeah, I think let's take this week, enjoy the win, and tweak, make adjustments, try some new things, maybe try some new faces on the offensive side of the ball. And then, you know, let's go on the road against Ole Miss. I think it'll be a good test for us, but I think we have the advantage, and I'm ready. Let's go 5-0.
Sure.
Or should I say 1-0?
Exactly.
Exactly. All right. Well, I mean, that could probably pretty much do it for all of us. Did y'all have anything else that you wanted to mention? No.
Nope, that's a wrap. Keep it rolling.
Keep it rolling. I will say this, Saints are 0-2, but, man, they've been a lot closer than I would have imagined. And just new coach, new starting quarterback, a lot of other new players, they haven't been far off. They could easily be 1-1. Long shot, maybe 2-0, but that's probably a tall task. But I don't know. Do you guys feel like this is just a complete rebuilding year, or could they, I don't know, maybe surprise people?
I think everybody from LSU is kind of translated to the Bengals and Commanders fan bases at this point.
Right.
And it sucks that the Joe Burrow got hurt today with that toe injury. I don't think we mentioned that. Hopefully he has a speedy recovery and it's nothing that lingers too long, but Jaden Daniels still looking good for the Commanders. So good luck with them. I saw that the video, they were like showing all the NFL players from LSU. Like, they showed Jaden Daniels, like Commanders, it's like a big roar. And then they save Burrow and Chase on the Bengals for last and everybody erupts. So it's kind of crazy that they got a bigger cheer than like the hometown Saints whenever they had a few players up there.
Right. And did y'all see, I don't know. Did you see any of the Giants Cowboys game?
I saw like a few highlights.
Okay. No, just Malik Nabers balled out. I mean, he did what he needed to do, had them in a position to win. And then the Giants defense just let Cowboys go down the field and tie it up, take it to overtime and win it. But yeah, LSU players balling out in the pros. We're balling out in the stadium, in college too. So hopefully they continue to do that this week, at home in convincing fashion. And we will have that for you as well as all the other college football news and notes. So definitely stay tuned. Follow up with us next week. We'll have all that for you. Until then, hope everyone has a great week. Stay safe, stay tuned, and we'll talk to you next time right here on Talking Takes.